Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven, stay driven.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bareback Facts. I am your host, Dallas Ducal, and with me today, I have an incredibly special guest. I've got a very busy guest on my show today. Welcome, Crazy Steve, to the show.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. How's everyone doing today?
Oh man, I'm doing great. You know, I mentioned before we went live, you know, this is a surreal moment for me. I'm gonna have my fan moment here. I'm a big fan of what you do in the ring. Your name really fits your style in the ring. You've really put your body on the line in a lot of your matches. So I guess let's get right into this, man. Right now you just got done wrestling at House of Hardcore. You had a title match.
It was kind of a landstone or landmark moment for me in the sense that it was my first time wrestling in the ECW arena. So that was pretty cool. I got to check that off the old bucket list. I think the most satisfactory part about that whole experience was the fact that I got to do it. Because there's a lot of shows that run out of the 2300 arena. But I think the one thing that I can really take a lot of pride in is that I did it for Tommy Dreamer, who helped, you know, arguably was one of the pillars of ECW and definitely helped make that organization what it is known as today, you know. And it was pretty awesome. I showed up and Dreamer was the one who actually opened the doors to me to the 2300 arena, and I was like, yeah, it was really cool. And I said to him, I was like, dude, you realize, like, I mean, I've wrestled in Philadelphia before, but I've never wrestled in the arena, so this is my first time in here. And he's like, well, okay, let me give you the tour. This is where I fell off of this. This is where I fell off of that, and kind of gave me like a run of the place, which mostly consisted of landmarks that he was tossed off of. It was a really cool, surreal moment for me. And I like wrestling for Dreamer. I've known Tommy for a couple of years now, since probably when I first started wrestling for Impact Wrestling. I'd been on shows with him before, but I really got to know him when we were in Impact together. And I'm really happy and proud to wrestle for somebody like Tommy.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, you said it best. Tommy Dreamer, when you think about extreme wrestling and guys putting their bodies on the line in matches, you know, Tommy Dreamer is one of the top names that you think of. You know, he really was sort of the standard bearer for ECW, and he competed in some really hellacious matches, you know, really set the bar. So that had to have been really a surreal moment for you to not only be in the arena, but also get like the grand tour from the man who's been basically, you said it best, tossed around every inch of the arena, really.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the one thing that like I'll say about Tommy is like his passion for the business is unparalleled, you know, and I think that's the one thing that I respect about him the most is that he is just so passionate about pro wrestling that you can't help, like just being around him, you can't help but feed off of that, you know. He's not somebody who's bitter about pro wrestling. He still loves pro wrestling after doing it for so many years. And it's like a breath of fresh air, you know, being around him.
Yeah, that's really exciting. So, you know, a lot of people know you from TNA, but a lot of people don't know that you competed in GCW, Great Canadian Wrestling, and you actually competed in Maximum Pro Wrestling as well. So tell us a little bit about your early wrestling career and really how you kind of clawed your way to where you are now, because, I mean, you've had a pretty interesting journey.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, I mean, kind of to segue into that, like when I first left Impact Wrestling, Tommy was one of the first guys who called me and said to me, he said, like, I want you to wrestle for House of Hardcore, but I kind of want you to tell your story. He knew my story, and you know, close friends and family know my story as well, which I actually spoke about it on House of Hardcore TV. But I broke in 2003 through Showtime Eric Young's WrestlePlex in Cambridge, Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
And so through that, I pretty much traveled all around Canada wrestling for approximately 12 years before even getting to television. And I wrestled for, like you had said, Maximum Pro Wrestling, and Rock Solid Wrestling is another organization that just literally just now got a TV deal. So I'm happy for those guys and friends and family over there. But yeah, I mean, Border City Wrestling, I've wrestled for them quite a bit. That's through Scott D'Amore. They run like tremendous shows, and I was really fortunate to have somebody like somebody who trained me like an Eric Young, who has a reputation throughout, not just throughout professional wrestling, but especially throughout Ontario as well. So I always tell like young kids or students who are just coming up, this business isn't so much who you know, it's who's willing to say they know you. And when you have somebody like an Eric Young, who has a great reputation about himself, that kind of opens up the doors for, you know, for you as well. And it's my responsibility to carry that tradition of professionalism that he instilled in me as I was coming up, you know, and I feel like I've done a great job of doing that. And because of that, I was able to wrestle for all these awesome promotions throughout Ontario.
Yeah. And I think people would agree that you've definitely done a great job of conducting yourself as far as professionalism goes, because you've had a great deal of success. Basically everywhere you've gone, you've had a nice level of success, you know, being a tag team, multiple time tag team champion. You were a tag team champion at GCW. You were tag team champion at Global Impact when you were there. You even competed for a championship with ESW for the ESW Interstate Championship as well. So you've had some great moments, and of course, just most recently, you competed for a championship with House of Hardcore. Shown that. A lot of people that are listening right now are gonna kick me if I don't start asking you about Impact. But before we get into your experiences on Impact, because you had a lot of success as part of their heel stable there, Decay. But before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit more about the independent circuit and sort of the stigma or the, you know, lack of attention I think that it gets with promotions like WWE sort of taking up the big headlines, I guess, you know, sort of snatching up talent and kind of having that ability, being a multi-billion-dollar company, having the ability to sort of out-advertise the competition, so to speak. What would you say to people who haven't really checked out independent wrestling? What do they need to know about it that makes it so much different from you know, the big company?
If you are one of those people, know that you are not alone. There are others like you, myself included. Like when I first started in 2003, I really didn't know of independent wrestling. Like I didn't know that there was independent wrestling around me. I didn't know. I knew WWF at the time and WCW, of course, and ECW. And there was like, I had tapes from Japan and stuff like that. So I knew that there was wrestling around the world, but I had no idea that there were independent shows all over the place. Until I broke into pro wrestling through Eric Young's WrestlePlex. So, you know, and that was back in 2003. I look back, like nowadays, you can literally professional wrestling every day of the week if you wanted to, you know? And
yeah,
this is like, I mean, it's on TV every day of the week. And that's not including YouTube. With social media being as powerful as it is, kids today have no idea how good they have it in regards to access to professional wrestling. But the one thing that I do try to tell anybody who has never seen professional wrestling live before is that you go to an independent show, find your local independent pro wrestling show and check it out. Cause there's not only a lot of good talent, but there's a lot of good professional wrestling shows, and they're so much different than going to a live event. I've been to several WWE live events, and they're awesome in their own right. But going to an independent wrestling show it's so much more intimate, and the crowd plays so much more of a bigger role in any given independent wrestling show as opposed to something for the WWE. Because a lot of times the WWE, they're wrestling for the television camera, you know? Whereas an independent shows, there's usually no cameras there that are capturing it. So the wrestlers are wrestling for the people who paid their money to come sit down and cheer and boo and all of that. And it's an awesome experience. It's a fun night out, and you're literally like up close and personal with the athletes. And I think too, like watching it on TV and watching it live, there's so much more difference to it in the sense of, like, it's right in front of you. It's, you know, wrestling is a very intense form of entertainment. And when you're there live, you can't help but feel that and see that. And like you have no choice but to experience it, because you're literally like, you know, 5-10 feet away from the action as it's happening in front of you.
You know, and I think when I think about that, I think about, it's good that you brought that up, because I think about promotions like Smash, where, you know, they are kind of finally starting to get, you know, on YouTube, where they are starting to get, you know, kind of televised, sort of getting a little bit of exposure. But you look at those matches and they're, you know, they're in a gym, it's tight, it's packed. And the people that are in there, they clearly want to be there. They're invested in the people that are wrestling there. There's a connection there that, you know, they know that there's not, you know, a roster of 200 guys that they can just sort of push out there. They know these wrestlers. There's a level of intimacy there that you described that I think really fits promotions like the ones that you're talking about. So moving forward, again, you know, you've been on the independent show, the independent scene for a while. So far, what would you say has been, you know, your favorite experience outside of, going to the ECW Center and wrestling in House of Hardcore? Or is that your favorite experience thus far? I mean, is there a particular promotion you've wrestled for that you enjoyed the most so far that you've been wrestling?
That's such a tough question. It's really difficult to answer that, because I mean, there's like, I don't know if I can categorize a favorite specific place. I love pro wrestling, all forms of pro wrestling. Like, I love all of it. So, you know, wrestling for Impact was great, because Impact got me, like, I was able to travel all over the place. I get to wrestle in Scotland and I got to wrestle in England, and the fans there are tremendous. But, you know, I was just in Philadelphia last weekend, and the fans in Philadelphia are extremely passionate. And I it's funny, because I feel like they almost get like a bad rep of being too bloodthirsty or whatever. And I definitely did not have that experience. I did not have that experience at House of Hardcore. They were awesome. Everybody was cool. And like, one of my favorite things when I go to any show is being at the merch table and talking to the fans one-on-one and having them come up to me, and we just have conversations and having that human to human interaction, which is also something that you don't get at a WWE live event.
Yeah.
Just simply based on how grand and how big that event is, you, for the majority of it, you don't get that. Whereas an independent wrestling show, you can go up and actually talk to the wrestlers. And I love that aspect of independent wrestling, is meeting the fans who come and, you know, and just come over and say hi, or like tell me their stories, and hearing their stories is really, really cool for me. And it's like, that can turn a bad show into a good show, like on a dime. I've had several times where I've, you know, been tired or sore or beat up, and I'm at a show and I'm not feeling it. And then this little kid comes up and he's, you know, he or she is just completely adorable, and it totally turns me around, and I'll leave that show feeling way better than I did when I showed up. You know what I mean? Like, and this might sound cheesy or whatever, but it's the truth, is that that makes my day just as much as it does the fans' day. If they come up to me like, you're my favorite, this, that, or the other, I can't believe I'm talking to you or whatever. And you know, that I'll go home with that. And that is so much like, that's part of the beauty of what we do.
Well, you know, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't think that's cheesy at all. You know, I think a lot of the fans really appreciate that. And I think that's what really separates professional wrestling from a lot of the other sports that are out there, a lot of the other forms of entertainment that we have, is, you know, you guys are on the road, you know, 300-plus days a year sometimes, jumping off of stuff, going through tables, getting hit with trash cans and things like that. And, you know, being able to talk face-to-face with somebody who's doing all that and is doing it for their fans, and getting that face-to-face conversation and having somebody take a picture with you or seeing somebody wear a shirt with your face on it. I mean, that has got to be tremendous, a tremendous feeling, is knowing that you're appreciated. I think that you've definitely had that experience, and I think a lot of people listening right now have definitely appreciated what you've brought to the table. And it's with that question that I want to jump into the next segue of your kind of style of wrestling. You've done some pretty intense stuff. You've been slammed through some tables, some barbed wire. You've been hit with a lot of things. What is it? How do you bounce back from all that? How do you bounce back from all that abuse?
It's funny because it's not even like there is like, don't get me wrong. Like, I've definitely gone through my share of bumps and bruises and stuff like that. But I find that the biggest part, the most painful part, I guess, of pro wrestling is not so much what we're doing, because when we're doing that in the ring, like, the adrenaline is going, and
right.
you don't feel it till afterwards. But the actual part that is like work, as far as that's concerned, is the travel. The travel is the most painful part of pro wrestling, I find, too, because, like, I mean, yes, we're abusing our bodies for the entertainment of, you know, of the viewers, but it's then when you have to get inside that van with like six other dudes and you're driving, you know, 7-8 hours, and you're doing it on little sleep as possible, or, you know, and I'm not like, I think about it, and I'm not the biggest of professional wrestlers. So you get a guy like, you know, like a Big Show who's 7 foot, and like, there's no form of comfortable travel for him. You know what I mean? So somebody like me, who's much smaller than 7 feet, I'll assure you that, but like, even that in itself, like traveling from place to place, whether it be by airplane or car or whatever, you like, that is the real test of, you know, your physical limits as far as pro wrestling is concerned. Cause then you literally get out of that van or you get out of that airplane and you're all cramped up, you're sore, you stretch out for like a couple minutes, and then you go to the venue, and then you got to do it all over again. So that part's the work part. When we're out there and we're performing, that's not work. That's fun. That's, you know, and I'm lucky and thankful enough that I have a good head on my shoulders, that I try and take care of myself as much as I possibly can anyway, as far as dieting and physical fitness is concerned anyway. So, I feel like to do this at a high level, you don't really have a choice but to do that nowadays, because wrestling has evolved so much since I was watching it as a kid, that like, you have to be in shape in order to do this at a high level. You know, like, your body will just not hold up. It won't stand the test of time if you don't. So it's imperative that you take care of yourself and, you know, and you look after your body, because that's your vehicle. That's how you make your money, essentially.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm glad you brought up the travel, because you've traveled a lot. But, I mean, the amount of matches you guys have a year, people don't tend to realize, you know, how much you guys have to travel. Take us into the traveling process with, you know, when you're wrestling for these various promotions. You know, give the listeners an idea of, you know, how much of a grind you have to be on when you're touring to wrestle, because that is a lot of travel. It is a lot.
Yes, it is. And I have this, like, I have my Uber conversation quite often, because I take Uber quite a bit. So the Uber conversation usually goes along the lines of, like, I tell them where I'm going, like, oh, that's really cool that you get to travel, you get to see all these awesome places and stuff like that. But the thing is you're not really, I don't really get to see any of the places that I travel to, based on the fact that I'm not there long enough. So it's, you know, like, I get to see the inside of a gym, the inside of a hotel room, the inside of a building, and usually the inside of an airport. And that's about it. I've been to a lot of places, but I've never explored any of them, really. So,
yeah.
And, you know, in Canada too, especially, it's not uncommon to have your 6-7 hour car ride to, you know, to travel someplace, wrestle for 8 minutes, get back in the car and travel, you know, another 6 or 7 hours to the next show. I mean, it's the nature of the beast, and it's part of it. And I like to travel anyway, so that it's not so much of a hassle to me, but it can be a grind, in the sense from a physicality standpoint. Cause I mean, you know, after abusing your body for, I guess it's 15 years for me now, sitting in a car for an extended period of time, or even on an airplane, is really, it can be, it can get to you, you know, like, I mean, from a physical standpoint, my knees aren't what they used to be. So being cramped up in a car doesn't help that in any sense of the word. So it's definitely it's definitely a grind for sure. But I mean, it's worth it. Like, I wouldn't change it for anything.
And I mean, you're in a very unique position as a professional wrestler. You know, you get to, you know, you mentioned the travel, you don't really get to see the things you do, but I mean, you do get to, you know, sort of live that dream that a lot of, you know, kids growing up living, growing up thinking about, you know, you mentioned watching wrestlers when you were a kid. You know, I've been watching wrestling my entire life. My grandfather is an enormous wrestling fan. We've all tried wrestling moves, and some of them didn't go very well. But you mentioned Tommy Dreamer as one of your influences. But is there anybody else that when you were growing up that you watched that you really resonated with, that you really enjoyed watching?
Oh yeah, come on! I was a Hulkamaniac for sure. I mean, you know. Nowadays I couldn't give you any like answers nowadays because there's just too many people that I respect and like, and just, you know, like see how they have perfected the art. But as a kid growing up, Hogan was my man, you know, I was a Hulkamaniac, you know, 100%. And then as I grew older, into high school, then, and I feel like this won't come as a shock to anybody who has seen my career, but like darker characters like The Undertaker, Mankind, Raven.
Yes.
I really attracted myself to those type of characters for whatever reason. You know, that was just always my thing. And then as I grew into the business and started learning about the business, then other professional wrestlers like Dean Malenko or Eddie Guerrero, Jushin Thunder Liger, stuff like that, like guys like that, that really started to influence me and I really got to explore. It's really cool, like, I've always been a fan of professional wrestling, but having become a professional wrestler, I get to explore it on a whole different level, and I'm very thankful for that. You know, becoming a professional wrestler really opened up my eyes to other forms of pro wrestling that I might not have ever known existed.
Yeah, and I mean, you listed off some great names there. I mean, you know, The Undertaker, obviously, he is a, you know, the Hulk, Hulkamaniac. You know, Hulkamania was huge. You know, obviously, Hulk Hogan was and will always be a huge icon in the wrestling world. But, you know, The Undertaker, you talk about a guy with such longevity who's had such an iconic career, you know, had the streak. You know, everybody was after him. But, I mean, Mankind, you know, kind of, you know, you kind of give me that Mankind vibe, you know. The risks that he took, you know, I remember him going through Hell in a Cell. I don't know if you ever watched that when you were younger, but Mankind.
Come on now. Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
Seeing Mankind go through Hell in a Cell was pretty awesome, but also pretty brutal. You know, seeing some of the matches these guys were in, you know, Raven, obviously another very unique character. And you know, you kind of have a more darker character as well, which is kind of refreshing, you know, you know, there's a lot of more baby face characters, I think, now who get a lot more of that attention these days, because they're the ones that are, you know, super likable and you know, they're good, I guess, you know, they're the good guy. So moving forward, you've wrestled a lot. You know, we've talked about where you've wrestled in a lot of places, but you know, a lot of people will probably know you from TNA or now Impact Wrestling. And you came in as part of a stable, the Menagerie.
Yes.
What was it like to wrestle there? Did you consider that, you know, kind of the big step in your career, or would you say that other, you know, another promotion may be, you know, the big step, you know, your real highlighted moment so far in your career anyway?
Well, I mean, you know, I always have like, I think a lot of pro wrestlers are very goal orientated, and I'm no exception to that. So like when I was on the independent circuit, there was certain independents that I made a goal to set out that I want to wrestle for them one day and Impact. And then eventually I would wrestle for them. Okay, well, what's the next goal? what's the next step? What's always the next thing? You know, what's around the corner? And Impact was one of those things that I want, like one of those goals that I had set out for myself for quite a while. And again, you know, I can't thank Eric Young enough. He was a huge influence in my career, continues to be a huge influence in my career. And it was because of him who was the reason why I was able to get the opportunity I did with Impact Wrestling. So the story goes, it's kind of crazy. For the better part of 12 years, I was trying to get with Impact Wrestling, and I was sending them stuff and constantly, you know, hounding them to try and get a tryout or anything with them, simply based on the fact that the programming at the time was awesome. It was really new, it was fresh, and I had a lot of friends who worked there, and I felt as though like I wanted to wrestle with my friends. You know, that's how I always kind of came up.
Right.
Through independent wrestling,
right.
I can have a great time at any given independent show, but I generally have a better time when I get to do it with my friends. And so I had sent a tape to or a DVD, I guess, to Impact Wrestling at the time. And during that time, personally, I was looking to move to the United Kingdom. So I had a lot of stuff going on in my life, personally and professionally, all at the same time. And I had set out to move to the UK, and I got, at the same time that I had set out to move, I was applying for my visa, and I had also sent a DVD to Impact Wrestling. And I had gotten my visa was accepted, and I was about to move two days out of moving to the UK. I got a call from Bob Ryder, and he had said, "Hey, this is Bob Ryder from Impact Wrestling. We got your submission, and we'd like to bring you in for a tryout." I said, "Okay, great." He's like, "Now, I was told that you were going to go visit the UK or something like that." I said, "Well, I wasn't really going to go visit. I was actually going to move my entire life there. But I can postpone that based off of this conversation." He said, "Okay." And this is in February, and I had said, "When would you like me to come down?" He said, "Well, we were thinking about bringing you in the March." I said, "Okay, all right." So,
all right,
yeah. So that conversation happened, and I was like, "All right, I guess I will switch my flight." So $300 later, I switched my flight to move at the end of March. I went down to the Orlando, and I did my tryout. It went really well. I ended up actually wrestling Eric Young in my dark match, if you will. And during that time, like I did very well. But I mean, anybody can have a great match with Eric Young, you know, he can have a match with a broomstick and it's going to be tremendous. So I don't know if that really showed everything that I was capable of, but the agents and whoever was looking on, they were really impressed, and they enjoyed what I was bringing to the table. And, at the time I was doing, in independent Crazy Steve. So I was wearing a loincloth. I still had the face paint. I was dark and creepy. I had a straight jacket, the whole nine yards. And during that time, I had found out that they already had this idea for like a carnival gimmick going on. And timing is everything. And I had just kind of come in. They never had me in their plans, but they had this carnival thing. And then they just gave this crazy guy a dark match. And they thought, you know, he could be a creepy clown in this whole menagerie angle that we have coming up. And so I knew that, and we didn't, I didn't think I was going to wrestle the next day. I was down there for 2 days. And I felt like, you know, even from the feedback that I got from the other wrestlers and the agents and stuff like that, it was all good stuff. So I didn't feel like I was going to wrestle the next day. I felt like they had seen what they needed to see. And oddly enough, Tommy Dreamer was there for that, and he gave me some advice after seeing my first dark match. And he just gave me a couple tidbits of information of what he thought would be better the next time if there was ever another opportunity. And I showed up the next day, and I believe he had a student there, and they had asked me to wrestle the student in another dark match. I said, "Yeah, absolutely, I'd be happy to." And I feel like part of that was due to the fact that Eric Young is a pro's pro, and so, like I said, you know, anybody can have a good match with him. Whereas, you know, they wanted to see if I can carry a match, and I had been wrestling for 12 years up to this point, so I felt very confident in my abilities. But I, knowing the idea that they had for this clown character, and taking the advice that Tommy had given me the day before, I took all of that and I switched up everything. I didn't wear the straitjacket to the ring. I painted my face like a clown. I changed my mannerisms. I did all sorts of things just to make sure that they don't have a choice not to hire me. and the match was great. It came off really well. And I guess one of the big things too was, we can also touch on this as well, that I'm legally blind. So wrestling for a large company like this, and they knew, like, they knew that I was legally blind and I can't see and all that jazz. So, you know, putting me in the ring with somebody who is less experienced than me was also a visual representation of what I can do, and, you know, to make sure that I can do this in the safest way possible without, you know, seriously injuring another human being that I'm in there with.
Yeah.
And, you know, and go ahead.
Oh, continue. Yeah, keep going. No, keep going.
Oh, so after after my second match, I met with, at the time, who was head of creative, I want to say, is John Gaborik. He pulled me aside and he thanked me for, you know, for my hard work and stuff like that. And I thanked him for the opportunity. And he asked me a couple questions in regards to, you know, what is happening in my life right now. And I was like, well, I'm moving to the UK. But you know, if I get word that you guys need me, I'll be here the next TV taping. You know, it doesn't matter how far I am. I will make sure that I'm here, know that I'm committed to, you know, to Impact Wrestling, and I'm committed to whatever you guys want to do with me. And then the last question he asked me was like, okay, so I got to ask. Yep, what's up? And I know you have eyesight problems. I said, yeah. So how do you do it then? and I was like, well, you know, and it's really difficult for me to explain how I can perform in the ring because I don't know. I've never had good eyesight, so I have nothing to compare it to. When I was born actually blind. Like, I was born with cataracts, which is very rare in infants. And at a young age, doctors would remove the cataracts, so I was able to see. However, I was also diagnosed with glaucoma. So as I grow older, my eyes get worse. Yeah, so when it comes to wrestling in independent shows, and they have, like, I'm wrestling in smoky bars and the ropes are really thin and black, like, I cannot see the ropes. House of Hardcore is a great example. House of Hardcore, everything is black. The walls are black. The ring is black. The ropes are black. I can't see. Cannot see the ropes to save my life. So that could become a challenge, and they had brought that up at, you know, when I had done my tryout for TNA. And I just explained to them, I just tried to, like, as best I could, I was like, well, you know, production here is really good and the lights are really bright, so I can kind of see, you know, colorful blurs, yada, yada, yada. And he was like, okay, great. You know, everything was, John was very responsive and awesome. And the tryout went well. And then literally two days before I was to move to the United Kingdom, I got a call from Bob Ryder saying, hey, we're going to bring you in, you know, we're going to hire you and this, that, or the other. And it was a dream come true. I was like, well, what do I do about this whole UK situation? You know? And he was like, because my biggest worry was moving to the UK. I was like, I was known on the independent circuit and around Ontario, but you know, that's not necessarily like a hotbed. It's a hotbed for pro wrestling, but a lot of pro wrestling fans don't really know about it because it's kind of segregated into its own thing. Whereas the U.S. independent scene is huge. Right. And so it's not like I was coming in with a huge independent buzz or anything like that. So I was concerned that them having to fly me in from the UK, kind of relatively unknown talent, might sour them on the deal, but they were super awesome about it. And they're like, no, we'll fly you in. And based off of that, I said it was only going to be a one-time thing. Fly me in from the UK. I'm going to move to Nashville, and I'll be located there to make it easier on you, because I was doing anything to make it easier on the company so that they had, again, they didn't really have a choice not to hire me. You know, I wanted to help them out as much as I possibly could. And so this is a long-winded way to answer your question, but
no, it's no problem.
Wrestling as the crazy clown in the menagerie was nothing new to me. It was easy. I was the same character that I was on the independent circuit. I was just kind of painting that character with a lighter colors. So I think that's part of the reason why I feel like it worked so well for me, whereas other people, and this isn't a knock on Nux or Rebel or Rob Terry, who was the freak within the group. It's not a knock on them whatsoever, but I had 12 years experience doing this crazy character. So it was no big deal for me. Whereas for the rest of those three, it was like, hey, we want you to do this. We want you to be this crazy carnival thing now. And so they kind of had to put on new shoes and learn as they go on television. And that can be extremely, you know, that can be extremely difficult. Whereas for me, it was, again, it was the same character I've been doing for 12 years at that point. So I was just painting it with lighter colors.
That is incredible. I actually did not know that you had those visual problems. That is absolutely amazing that you can do the things that you do and really not be able to see. That is pretty incredible. And I don't know how many of your other fans know that, but that's absolutely amazing that you can do that. We're going to take a quick commercial break. It's going to be a couple minutes, guys. I want to talk to you about your experience in after the Menagerie, and then we're going to get to your experience getting to wrestle alongside Abyss, who's also, you know, sort of legendary at this point in the wrestling world.
Absolutely. I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. So you and I will be in here while the commercial goes, and you can feel free to talk to me if you like. Nope. We don't want that. You don't want that. There we go.
I'm Black Man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
Yeah.
To the Blackmobile.
It's on commercial now, dude.
To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard, pronto.
Yeah. I'm going to message you on Twitter.
Will okay, yeah, sounds
man
good.
Make it to the crime on time?
We'll be back
will
in about
he be
3 minutes.
On CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your ghoul friend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215 288 7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our Wacky Stores page on Facebook.
All right, everybody. Welcome back, Steve. Hope you enjoyed a little bit of a breather.
Yeah, I got a chance to have a drink of water. I'm ready. Ready to go.
Same here. So before we went to the break, I promised everybody we were going to get to your Time of the Biz and, of course, Rosemary. But before we do that, before the break, a lot of people might not have caught this since the recording is still circulating on social media and the like. But you mentioned the fact that you're legally blind. And you are out there jumping off top ropes, doing all the stuff that you do. So, you know, what was it like growing up having that, you know, impediment to your sight and training for these for your career? I mean, what sort of challenges did that present for you?
Oh yeah, well, I mean, I guess like from a school, like academic standpoint, school came very difficult for me. I had to work really hard to get mediocre grades, I guess is the best way to put it, based off of my eyesight. So, you know, a lot of things as far as academics are concerned, like reading a textbook is extremely difficult for me. It's strenuous on my eyes and I can't do it for a long period of time. You know, or copying things off the chalkboard or reading things off an overhead, stuff like that was never easy for me. Not only that, but I mean, like in school from a visual standpoint, I look funny. I mean, I have like, I had big glasses that made my eyes look huge. So, and I was like I was the geeky kid who liked comic books and pro wrestling. And so that definitely didn't necessarily put me in the popular group as far as, you know, as far as social standpoint is concerned. So I struggled with challenges like that, like a lot of kids do, you know what I mean? I can relate to that for sure. When it comes to professional wrestling, I almost didn't get trained. There was a time where Eric Young almost didn't train me. A friend of mine, a brother of mine, and a pro wrestler in his own right named Jake O'Reilly found Eric Young's WrestlePlex. And I had come up in the business with Jake O'Reilly through backyard wrestling is how we met. And then from there we branched on to independent wrestling and he's been very successful for himself too. He's a successful jiu-jitsu player. He's wrestled for All Japan Pro Wrestling. You know, if you're out there, look him up, Jake O'Reilly. He's awesome. But he's the one who found the school originally and he had asked me to come out and, you know, train. And at the time I was concerned with one, my size. I was about 130 pounds. I was a tiny kid and I felt as though pro wrestling was something that I definitely wanted to do, but I felt as though I needed to go to school first and get like a college degree. And he kept hounding me. And eventually, you know, I had called my mom and I had asked my mom, you know, here's what's happening in my life right now. Mom, you know, what do you think I should do? I need some advice. And she said, buddy, you can go to college at any point in time. There's no age limit on college. There's definitely an age limit on professional wrestling. And it's something that you've always wanted to do. So I think you should take this opportunity while it's in your path right now, while it's coming to you. So with that, I was like, all right, I'll come to the school. Now, unbeknownst to me, it was a struggle just to get me in there in the first place where Jake O'Reilly had talked to Eric Young and he said, hey, I know you're looking for students and I got a buddy of mine and I think he'd be really good at it. You mind if I bring him along? And EY said, yeah, sure, absolutely. You know, bring him by. Well, there's a catch. And EY kind of looked at O'Reilly puzzled and he's like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, he's kind of blind. And EY was like, no. Yeah. I cannot, you know, I can't train a blind pro wrestler. Like, I just can't do it. Not only that, but like, I don't want to take here's the thing. I don't want to take a blind guy's money, number one. And number two, I don't want to be the guy who has to crush his dreams and let him know that he can't do this. Like, you have to be able to see in order to do this. He's like, well, he can kind of see. I'm not saying he's completely blind, but, you know, he does have eyesight issues. And it took some convincing, but eventually EY said, okay, fine, bring him along. And I was the only student that he ever did this for, but he allowed me to step foot in the ring without paying him a dime, you know, upon our initial meeting. And we just kind of tested out my eyesight in that regard. Because it's hard for me to explain to people what I can and can't see because, I have never really seen properly, so I have nothing to compare it to. And so, you know, without my glasses, we kind of looked at you know, if I can see the ring ropes, if I can kind of run the ring ropes, you know, I just literally stepped foot in a wrestling ring. So it's not like I'm doing anything extremely dangerous. This was more just a test to see what I can and can't see. And based off of that, he said, okay, I'm pretty sure I can train you. And so from that point forward, I was able to come to the school and train. And the beauty of pro wrestling is it's very hands-on. You know, your opponent or whoever you're working with is right there in front of you. So, you know, I'm very good in that regard. But it comes down to, like, you know, I guess the best way to put it is, like, things like small print or I cannot see, like, I'm not seeing the details in a person's face without my glasses on. And the internet will have you believe that I wear contacts when I wrestle, and that's simply not the case. I don't wear any contacts. I can't physically wear contacts when I wrestle. So I literally, like, the glasses come off, and then I just go out and do what I do. But to me, it's kind of, it comes almost as a benefit in some ways, in the sense that, you know, one of their biggest fears is public speaking. You know, a lot of times, from a human standpoint, people don't like to be in front of crowds, public speaking, or just being in front of crowds in general. Whereas I don't have that fear because I don't see the people. They're all colorful blurs to me. So none of that has ever really affected me as far as, like, being in front of an audience. I generally like being in front of an audience. Like, that's a thrill for me. But I never had that fear of, oh, my God, they're all looking at me, because I can't see them. So it doesn't bother me at all.
That's one thing that I think gives you an advantage over some people really in that regard is cutting a promo. You don't have to worry about if people are, you know, making fun of your promo or anything, because you can't really see them. But, you know, so that's actually really amazing, though. You know, the job that you do is already incredibly challenging because a lot, you know, for people that are not really into wrestling or don't really understand it, you guys are not just putting your bodies on the line. You're telling a story, and you have to get people invested in that story. It's more than just ricocheting your body off ropes into people and hitting each other really hard. You know, there's a story that's being told. And if, you know, if nobody's invested in it, then you guys are, then you guys aren't really having as much fun as you could be. And you're not really going to have people as invested in you as you would otherwise. So that's actually pretty incredible that you can do what you do and be visually impaired like that. That's actually really amazing.
Yeah, I mean, besides the physicality standpoint of professional wrestling, there's an artistic side to it. Like, professional wrestling is live theater in front of your eyes, essentially.
Yeah.
And I don't need my eyesight to show that artistic side. You know, it's not necessarily needed in order for me to show off that artistic ability that pro wrestling offers. But yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, as far, like, from a physical standpoint, yes, pro wrestling is, you definitely, it's a very physical form of entertainment, but there's also an artistic side to it. And I've definitely attracted myself towards that. Like I had mentioned before, like, you know, with characters that I grew up idolizing as a kid, like Mankind and The Undertaker, yes, Mankind was a very physical wrestler, but I was really attracted to his promo ability and the character that he portrayed in the ring as well. Like, that, to me, was more influential than the physical stuff that he had done. I mean, I'm not trying to out, you know, there's only one Mick Foley, and there's a reason for that. And, you know, for better or worse, he's feeling the effects of that today. But the respect that I have for someone like that, not only is a physical standpoint, but from an artistic standpoint too, of taking a character and committing to it and, you know, thinking outside the box and really exploring what that character is all about. And that's part of what attracted me to professional wrestling in the first place. It's kind of like comic book characters come to life, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you bring that up. I'm glad you bring up, you know, Mankind and The Undertaker, because those are two guys who are, you know, they put on great matches. They've done some incredible things. you know, physically. But I think what people remember most about Mankind, and especially The Undertaker, is the presence that they bring with them to an arena. The a whole atmosphere changes, you know, when these guys came into the stadium that they were in. So I think that is definitely something that I can really see in you, as especially when you make your approach to the ring. There's something so visceral about what you do. So that brings me to the next question on the docket is, you know, how did you really come up with the persona that you use on the independent circuit? Because your persona is actually pretty, I mean, it is very unique. There's not a lot of people doing what you do. I mean, you do see people employ the use of paint on their faces. You know, that's something that people have done for a while. But your character in and of itself is actually quite unique. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I guess, like, is a very kind of a natural thing. It's not something that I put on. Like, it's not a put-on persona so much as it is, like, that's a part of me. It's when you're seeing the person perform in front of the ring, like, that's a very real person in front of you. There's no two ways about it. It's as real as it gets. And I've kind of, I guess I've always been that way in the sense of, it's just, you know, things that inspired me as a kid, from art to music to movies to comic books, all of that is just kind of wrapped into one thing. And that's kind of where Crazy Steve comes from. The name itself was given to me from another independent professional wrestler named Sin Bodhi, wrestled for the WWE as Kazarni for a short period of time. And he was somebody from an independent standpoint who I idolized coming up in the business. And he came to Eric Young's WrestlePlex and kind of trained with me for a bit. And I was already doing this kind of crazy, wacky thing from like a physical standpoint and how I carried myself, even in training, because it was always instilled in me to, when you're training, you know, wrestle like you're wrestling in front of 50,000 people. You know, even if there's five people within the gym here who are just training as well, like, you should be wrestling like there's 50,000, because when you do wrestle in front of a large crowd, it'll just be second nature to you. You know, you won't know any other way. So I was always doing that from the get-go, and it was just kind of a natural thing. It's just where I felt like I fit. I've always kind of been, you know, growing up, I was kind of the outcast. So to take all of that, you know, whatever that was, that emotion or those, you know, those aspects of that, and to roll it into this character was easy for me. And it was a release more than anything. You know, I didn't need to, well, my other friends would be outside of school or whatever. Well, my other friends would be doing, you know, drinking and partying and stuff like that. That's not where I got my kicks from. That's not where I got my physical outlets from. I got that through pro wrestling, and that was my way of exercising those demons. I don't know if that's a good way of putting it, but like, that was my release from that. So, I've done that from the get-go and continue to do that today. And it's, you know, I think that's the best part about, and that's kind of the reason why I've seen the level of success that I have, because it's real and I'm not putting it on. And that shows through, you know, that shines through the camera, that reaches kids and people who see that. It affects them on an emotional level, which is what I attempt to do every time I'm performing. I don't just want to wow you with, you know, physicality and acrobatics. I want to affect the viewer on an emotional level. To me, that's what stays with you after the show's over. Hulk Hogan was never the greatest professional wrestler, but he affected a massive amount of people on an emotional level, to the point where, like, once the show was over, you were still thinking about that. You know, like, I could still tell you about WrestleMania 3. You know, when Hogan slammed Andre, because it affected me on such a level that, like, you can't help but, you know, but remember that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really glad you brought that up. So now we'll get to the moment that I know a lot of people have been waiting on. I can see a bunch of fan pages tweeting about DK. Let's get to it. So I've seen some people I know are DK fans. We'll get to it now. So in January of 2016, you joined with Abyss, and Rosemary as a member of the stable Decay. Now, the music that they used for Decay is what you use now, correct? You know, Marilyn Manson, the Nobodies.
Correct. Yep.
And you guys sort of well, I don't want to say you debuted because you were already with the company, but you guys sort of debuted this new stable by attacking the tag team champions and stealing their titles. And you guys debuted as heels. But you guys ended up becoming really, despite being heels, you guys ended up becoming like fan favorites. So take us through, you know, what it was like to debut again in a new stable with Abyss, who's really a journeyman wrestler, who's really made his mark in terms of the crazy things that he's done to himself in the ring. And then, of course, Rosemary, a.k.a. Courtney Rush or Holly Lakeman, whichever name that she likes to use. I believe right now she's still using Rosemary as part of part of Impact, but she's definitely earned a lot of love on my end. But explain, you know, tell the viewers what it was like to kind of be part of this stable when they were pitching in the idea. What were you kind of excited about it? What was that like?
Well, the birth of Decay essentially is what you want to get into. So
yeah, birth.
Well, I was. The menagerie did not last as long or reach, you know, the chapters that we would have liked it to. And I had found myself kind of floating within the company as I was still the clown, Crazy Steve.
Yeah.
But they didn't really have anything for me. And so I took it upon myself to pitch them the idea of Decay. It wasn't known as Decay at the time, but myself and Eric Young sat down and we kind of came up with this idea. Now, the idea of working with Abyss was nothing new. It was something that I'd always wanted to do from the moment I was sending, promo tapes to Impact Wrestling. Well, yeah, and I felt too, like, not only is it Abyss, like, from a human standpoint, he's a tremendous talent as far as professional wrestling is concerned.
Yeah.
He's one of the most unselfish people that I've ever met. And he has a wealth of knowledge, which I could see myself learning from. But from a character standpoint, even on the independent scene, I felt like independent Crazy Steve and Abyss just kind of match up. And I felt like that was my best way to kind of get into the company and kind of pitch this idea of me working with Abyss in some form or fashion. Now, they ended up going with the menagerie idea, but that was my foot in the door. So perfect. I'm happy with that. Then when it came time for the menagerie to kind of close its doors and start a new chapter, that was when I threw out the idea of working with Abyss again, because that was always in my back pocket of this idea that, you know, I can still, like, the character of Crazy Steve and Abyss just kind of, they match. And
yeah.
So I wrote out this idea. I pitched this angle to have myself tag with Abyss and kind of go back to my independent roots of being a little bit more dark and creepy as opposed to the lovable clown Crazy Steve. And we wrote this whole thing, and at the time, this is when Billy Corgan was coming into the company as well. So it just kind of worked out in the sense of, I found out in December that they were going to go with my ideas. I was actually at a Nashville Predators game with Eric Young, and John Gaborik was there. And he pulled me aside. He said, "Hey, I got a Christmas present for you." I said, "Okay, what's that?" He said, "We're gonna do your idea. We're gonna go with your tag idea of Abyss." And I was like, "Oh, I'm so happy!" And he's like, "Check this out." And so it was Billy Corgan who came up with the name Decay, and they had said we were thinking about adding a female component to the group as well. And at the time, they didn't have the member, like the female member. They had a couple ideas of who it was going to be originally, but they had just kind of gave me that information, and I went home with that. And at the time, I knew Rosemary was working as the demon assassin Courtney Rush in Smash Wrestling, and she's I've known her from the time that she stepped foot in the wrestling business. I've known her from day one. She's always been uber talented. She's always been committed to anything that she's doing. So to see the level of success that she's getting now is a surprise to maybe everybody but myself. You know what I mean? I've known her from day one, so I knew, like, There was no doubt in my mind that she was going to see the level of success that she's seeing now. And it's just going to continue to grow because she's a pro's pro and she's uber talented and an all around genuinely awesome human being. So that was no surprise to me.
Yeah, she did great work at Smash. She had some phenomenal matches. I know she put on some absolutely fantastic matches with Jessica Havoc, put on some great matches with Cherry Bomb over at Smash. They had probably one of the most storied rivalries at Smash. So she's definitely a hell of a worker. Very impressive resume on her part.
And so in knowing that, and knowing that they were looking for a female component to this Decay stable, I had pitched to them right away. I had messaged Rosemary and I said, hey, I know you're doing this thing in Smash and I don't know what, like, I didn't know what you were doing, you know, in life and is from a general standpoint, but we have this thing going on and I would like to pitch you for it. Would you be okay with that? She said, yeah, for sure. You know, go ahead, put my name out there. If you need any footage from me, let me know and I will give you whatever footage and we can put it in the right hands. So based off of that conversation, literally 2 weeks later, she was hired. I had her give me like a couple promos and some character stuff that she was doing on the independent scene to show the powers that be at Impact Wrestling. And I kind of put her over in the sense of like, hey, you need to check out this girl. I think, you know, if we're going to have a female component, this is the one. And literally 2 weeks later, she was hired and we were doing, we were in Philadelphia debuting. So it happened really, really quick, but it was, you know, I've worked with her before on the independent scene. She was a good friend of mine from the get-go. So I knew that we were going to work well together right off the hop. So that was a benefit to us as well. And then you add in Abyss, who already is an established character within Impact Wrestling. The three of us together was like a match made in hell, so to speak. Whereas, Abyss is he's the established character, so he legitimizes both of us. Rosemary is this brand new character that people have never seen before, but is super creepy and super, like, you can't help but look away from this or look towards the screen when she's on camera. So she's a talent in her own right. And then you have Crazy Steve, who some of the fans knew me by this point, but I'm kind of repackaged into this new character, but I'm super comfortable within that character. So it was no problem for me to portray that on TV. And it all worked into one thing. In regards to the music and the look, that's kind of also, you know, part of my pitch. I knew what I wanted this thing to be from the get-go. I needed the okay from the office. And Billy Corgan was on, you know, he was totally on board with it and super attracted to the idea. And I had talked to him about it the first day that we were going to debut, we still didn't have theme music. And I knew that was a pivotal part of any new art form or performance, you know, coming into pro wrestling. Theme music is such a big component of that. And I pulled Billy aside and I said, hey, man, what are you thinking for theme music for us? And he said, I don't know. He said, I don't want like kind of like yelly, screamy music, you know, similar to what Bram was using at the time. And that's not exactly what I wanted at all either. I said, okay, great. I don't want that either. That's not what I don't feel like that's what this stable is about. I don't feel like, you know, Decay is this creeping, like it takes time and it's slow and methodical. He said, well, what are you thinking, Steve? And I knew that Billy Corgan was friends with Marilyn Manson. And being a fan of Marilyn Manson growing up myself, I had, you know, that's to me, if I could, that's what I wanted. So I said to him, you know, I said, well, I'm thinking like some old school Marilyn Manson. And he said, well, what song are you thinking of? And I didn't expect him to even say that. So I was like, oh, I don't know. Oh, no. I was like, I'm not sure, but that's what I'm thinking of. And he's like, okay. I said, give me an hour. I'll come back to you with a song. And so I was stoked on the fact that he was even, you know, he was open to the idea of me using Marilyn Manson because I knew that he was friends with Manson and that he could likely get the rights to that, to any song that I chose. It was a shot in the dark. Even if he had said no, then that's the worst that would have happened. So I literally went to my phone and I was looking through songs and just kind of picking out a couple songs that I felt kind of fit the vibe of what I wanted to portray. And the Nobodies was the number one hit that I was really attracted to. And so I came back to him and I said, hey, here's what I'm thinking. Check this out. And I let him listen to the song. He's like, oh yeah, I like that. Okay. And he said, okay, well, I will call Manson and I will see if we can get the rights. He's in L.A. and it's daytime there, so he's likely sleeping, and he's likely going to say no, just so you're aware. Okay, cool. No big deal. At least I tried. And, like, about 2 hours later, he came back. He's like, yeah, he's on board. He's cool with it. And so I was like, oh, my God, this is insane. And he's like, we're not out of the woods yet. We still got to talk to the record label, and we got to do this and that. And there was other circles that we kind of – other hoops that we had to jump through in order to get the rights
right.
to the music. But we ended up getting the rights to the music, you know, rather fairly quickly because we used it that day. So based off of that, it, like, everything kind of fell into place. And then you factor on that we were working with the Wolves at the time – in Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards, like that was a big step for me up to that point too, because they're two established talents in
yes.
their own right. So to have us, you know, get to work with the Wolves in this new stable, like all the pieces fell together rather quickly, which helped us immensely as far as, you know, when it came time to portray it on television. We kind of hit the ground running, so to speak, but we had a good pace under our feet. So.
Yeah, and you guys had a great – I mean, you guys had a great run. And, I mean, it culminated in you guys meeting at Bound for Glory with the Broken Hearties in the Great War. And, you know, for many people, that was a huge, huge match between you guys and them. So much going on in you guys' in your team's respective rivalries. So what was it like to work with the Hardys? I know they're not with Impact anymore, but you know, that was a great, great rivalry, that really culminated in an epic matchup for you guys. So what was that rivalry like? What was it like to work with those guys?
It was awesome. Like, and that's putting it mildly, you know, we, Decay was having a fantastic run up to that point anyway, and it was a lot of fun. It's definitely, the time I spent in Decay was probably the most fun I've had in pro wrestling, because it was a chance for me to really explore characters and show an audience what I can do as far as a promo is concerned. I've always felt like I have a really good promo, but, you know, as Clown Crazy, part of being that clown character was I wasn't supposed to talk, which is extremely
yeah.
frustrating for me when they told me that, I was extremely frustrated with that, because like, but cutting a really good promo was such a large
promo.
Part of pro wrestling.
Yeah,
yeah,
and in this rivalry, you actually cut a fantastic promo.
Yeah, and they kind of they allowed me to do that, which was so exciting for me, because I've always felt as though I'm talented in that area, and so getting the opportunity to do that was another facet that I can show the audience, like, hey, I'm not just a pro wrestler. Like, I can talk as well, and I enjoy it. And it was a lot of fun. But when it came time to working with the Hardys, it was just a natural fit. And I think that was one of the best things that I felt about that whole feud, was that it was a natural fit for both character or for both stables to come together like this. It wasn't a thing of like, we weren't forced into that. They weren't putting us in that position so that we can, you know, get over, so to speak. Like, we were already over to a point, and they were over to a
yeah.
point that it was just a natural fit that we were going to meet each other. And it culminated in Impact Wrestling's biggest pay-per-view in Bound for Glory. Leading up to that, we got to do some really, really cool stuff at the Hardy estate in regards to, you know, Deleter Decay, or
yes.
when they did Total Nonstop Apocalypto. and like, that is definitely some of my favorite stuff that I've ever done in pro wrestling, because that's all character stuff. It was Deleter Decay was one of my favorite things ever. It's a B horror movie come to life, so to speak.
Absolutely.
And, but the audience was in on it, and, you know, the audience is totally in on the joke, and they responded to it so well the thing is, what a lot of people don't know is that was like a skeleton crew. Deleter Decay was literally a skeleton crew of people, and they worked tirelessly around the clock to make it as awesome and as fun as they possibly could. Matt and Jeff had a huge hand in making that what it was. And, you know, we did our part as well, but as, like, from behind the scenes, you know, from production side and a camera side, like, the guys and girls behind the camera worked just as hard, if not harder, than all of the talent in front of the camera to make that as what it was. So for it to come out and for it to be as successful as it was a big moment of pride in my career and just a lot of fun in general. I mean, if it was never recorded, I still would have done all of that stuff.
You guys had to have had a lot of fun with it. I mean, you mentioned that you knew Rosemary or Courtney Rush, whichever you prefer, but you mentioned you knew her in the independent circuit before. You'd worked with her before. And I have to say, the chemistry between you guys and Abyss was just palpable on screen. You guys just sold it all the way, that creepy vibe. People really dug that. And, you know, a lot of people were sad to see Decay, you know, sort of end. But, you know, I have to ask, you know, could you have pictured a better ending for your stable than the Great War with the Broken Hearties?
I mean, yeah, it's tough, you know. To be fair, both of us, both Decay and the Hardys, wanted that to go way further than it ever did. We at least wanted to go for 6 more months of wackiness, and the ideas that we had and the levels that it was going to, like, that it had potential to get to was off the charts. And it's really unfortunate that wrestling fans won't get to see that, because we had some really cool stuff lined up. And, you know, the way the business is, it's constantly evolving, it's constantly changing, and it just for what it was. But we made the best with what we had. To me, like, as a wrestling fan, I've never seen a build to a pay-per-view as unique as what Decay and the Broken Hearties were doing at the time. You know, it was so weird and outside the box and generally fun that I was just excited to be a part of that. You know, I was excited to play a hand in that, and it was motivating to just, you know, to be as wacky and as crazy as we possibly could. There was no rules with them, and you know, we tried to explore that as much as we possibly could with what we were given, and I think we did a really good job of it. Things ended the way that they did. Now they almost it definitely, I feel like it ended too soon, but that's not a bad thing necessarily. You know, it's almost in a sense of, you know, better to burn out than to fade away, because there's still a audience for Decay. And you know, anything can happen in pro wrestling. Anything can happen in pro wrestling. So it's not to say that it's dead and gone. You know, you can't kill evil. You know, we will, there could be a time where we do come back and we reunite. That's definitely, you know, there's an audience that wants that, at least. At the very least, there's an audience that wants that. So.
I know. I have to say I've seen on Twitter a lot of fans of Decay, you know, clamoring for a reunion, just clamoring for it. So I think it's safe to say that the stable itself will truly never die.
Absolutely.
You guys have got legions of fans everywhere just hoping, praying, dying to see you guys return together. Speaking of the social media, I want to move towards another aspect of what you do that I think is just so incredible, is your connection to the fans. You know, you, Rosemary, some of the other wrestlers from Impact, and really by and large, a lot of, you know, I'm noticing more and more, but a lot of people in the independent circuit are using social media as another way of connecting to their fans. And you know, running your own social media pages and connecting to your fans on that level, what does that do for you personally? Because I find it very, not only impressive, but I also find it very touching that so many of you guys do take the time out of your day to your fans on Twitter and social media. So what is that added component-wise to what you do?
Well, it kind of comes back to when I was explaining, like, being at an independent show and having the fans come up and have that face-to-face conversation with you. Throughout social media, you kind of get a small sense of that as well. I've definitely received some really touching messages of just, like, you've inspired me to do this, or you've inspired me to do that. One of the coolest aspects of my career has been the idea that fans of mine are exploring their own artistic side. I'm very artistic oriented. I like to paint and draw, and you know, obviously with the face paint and the look that I present, all of that is me. even at the time of Decay, I was painting everybody. I was painting Abyss. I was painting Rosemary, painting myself. Like, the whole look of Decay was all kind of my twisted brainchild. And then it evolved onto its own thing, whereas, you know, Rosemary now does her own thing, and she's awesome. She's also an extremely talented artist in her own right, so it was just a matter of time before she took the ball and ran with that. So one of the cool things about social media in that regard is that I get to see a lot of people send me artwork, and they're like, hey, look what I did. Like, yeah. And that to me is one of the most rewarding and, like, all-around cool aspects of the business. When I was a kid, that's what I would do. I would draw wrestlers. I'd draw the Ultimate Warrior, Undertaker, Hulk Hogan. And to have other fans of professional wrestling draw me and paint pictures of me and stuff like that is mind-blowing. And it never, ever gets old. But with social media and Twitter and Instagram, it's just another way to stay connected with the fans. And it's really cool in that sense that, you know, the fans are passionate, so passionate that they will take time out of their day to write you something or tweet about you or, you know, tag you in some sort of Instagram post or something like that. And that's always like, there's a level of satisfaction that you get. It's not the same as it is like when it's person to person, but you get, it's like a small dose of that. It's like a smaller dose of that. And that, like, that can, you know, that can change my day from good to bad in a heartbeat. So I feel like not only that, but from a business standpoint too, it's important to have a social media presence. And, you know, there's a lot of people who granted they do it better than I do, but I try to be on social media as much as I can and try and promote myself as best as possible. But I don't ever want to be the type of person who's doing it simply based on the fact that, that I feel like I have to, like, oh, I need to do this, you know, because then it comes off as, to me, that comes off as fake and it's not true to myself. Like, so if I am promoting something on Twitter or Instagram, it's because I truly believe in it. And I generally believe in what I'm promoting or what I'm saying. I'm more of an Instagram person. I'm a visual person. So I love Instagram for the pictures and the art aspect of that. I very rarely kind of speak on Twitter because a lot of times I did feel like I don't have a lot of important things to say. So,
right. It's kind of like me.
But that's not to say that I won't respond to my fans. You know, if anybody ever messages me, I try and do my best to respond to them as best I possibly can. Sometimes it's harder than not, because there are times where you simply can't answer everybody. But I definitely try to take the time for everybody. I definitely try and make a point to try and take the time for everybody. That's important to me, not just from like a professional standpoint, but just from a human to human standpoint, you know? So
yeah,
I just,
you mentioned
do my best
how
to
it makes
be,
your day.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It makes your day. And
I
just
do my best
say,
to be a good person in general. I
can see that. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No. I don't necessarily, this will sound weird, but I don't necessarily go out of my way to make somebody's day. I'm not typing something out to be like, you know, this is really going to make their day and yada, yada, yada. Like, if that happens, then great. That's fantastic. And I hope for that to be the case, but I'm not purposely trying to do that to gain some sort of like self-worth out of that. You know, it's just, I just like connecting and talking to the fans and getting to hear their stories as well. Like, that's just as much, that holds just as much value to me as anything else in the business.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I mean, you know, I know you mentioned before that, you know, having people come up to you with your shirts or just talking to you and saying, hey, man, you know, that was amazing, you know, talking to you about your match or reaching out to you on Twitter. I mean, that's how I got a hold of you, which I was actually ecstatic when you got back to me, which I really appreciated. Can't say thank you enough for coming on. But, you know, you just reaching back to people, I'm almost positive, makes their day. You know, because, you know, they reach out to you hoping that you'll say, hey, how's it going? You know, even the simplest, hey, you know, thanks for messaging me, or that's really cool, I'm sure really does validate your fans, trust in you, even more. But we've only got a couple more questions for you, because I know, you're a busy guy. So we'll get to these. I did have a special request question, and you might laugh
Absolutely.
At it. I don't know.
Okay.
But
I'm excited. Let's hear it.
How much did it hurt to have Miss spit into your face?
It is, it's not fun. I'll say that. I already have eyesight issues. So getting Miss shot into my face is never a pleasurable time in any sense of the word. It burns. It's not fun. It's not enjoyable. I try to avoid it as much as possible. Let's put it that way. And I encourage everyone else to try and avoid it as much as possible as well. Yes.
That, you know, a lot of people told me, you got to ask him, you know, he got that Miss spit in his face. What was it like? You know, I basically thought the same thing. It probably isn't very pleasant. So
no,
I'm sure that really hurts. another question from somebody else that wanted to know, what was it like to have Abyss choke slam you onto people?
yeah. So, I mean, you know, self-sacrifice, we're ready for it. He's such a big dude, and he doesn't know his own strength. Like, he has no idea how strong he really is. So I was very thankful that I was landing on other people, because that not only did that give us the 1-2-3 in a lot of occasions, but, you know, to have the human cushion underneath you was definitely better than without it. But there were times – so there's definitely times where, like, because he is so strong, so bloody strong, that, like, he doesn't realize, like, how hard he's throwing you down. We did a match at Slammiversary. I want to say it's Slammiversary 2015, 2016 or something like that with the bromance. And we did a thing where he powerbombed me onto Jesse Godders. And I literally got concussed in that match because he threw me down so hard that I smashed the back of my head on the mat. And if you go back and you watch it, you literally see he slams me down and I'm crawling over to make the cover. And in my head, I'm thinking, oh, thank God this is over. Thank God this is done. Like, I was seeing stars, and I was out of it for sure. But that, like, again, you know, he's such a big dude. He just doesn't know.
He is a very big guy. That is for sure. This is a very, very big guy. Next up on the questions list, you know, you're wrestling for House of Hardcore. I believe it was reported in June, and I'm not sure how true this was, but it was reported in June of last year that you were at a tryout for the WWE at their Performance Center. Did you go to a tryout there, and what was that like?
Yeah, I did. So that was a crazy moment in my life as well. That at the time, I was leaving Impact Wrestling. My contract was up, and I knew that I had an opportunity to do this tryout for the WWE, and so I had a decision to make. Whether or not to stick around with Impact Wrestling or to explore other options. And I knew that Decay was, with new management underway, that Decay was definitely not on the, we were not priority number one, regardless of our popularity or how well we were doing. They had different things in mind. And with the Hardys leaving, and, you know, I just kind of looked around, and to me, like, I got to achieve so much in such a short span of time, you know, getting to work with the Hardys at TNA's biggest pay-per-view. That's a huge milestone. And I wasn't really sure what else there's definitely other goals that I could have accomplished within Impact Wrestling. 100% there was. And I have nothing but good things to say about Impact Wrestling. They offered me the stage to, you know, to show what I can do. And again, just nothing but good things to say, but at the same time, too, I felt like I had this opportunity to raise my own stock and explore other options. And up to that point, I had never done anything for the WWE. So I did do the tryout. It went very well. It was a great experience, a really positive experience. It's no joke, that's for sure. It's definitely no joke. They run you through the paces, man, and they definitely test you from a physical and mental standpoint, but never in a demeaning way by any stretch of the imagination. Just, you know, you have to be on your game if you're going to work for them. And I had a great experience. It was extremely positive. It was tough, but it was very rewarding. And I got good feedback afterwards. Who knows what's going to happen in the future? You know, up to this point, the door's open and anything can happen. It's just, you know, up to this point, it's just a matter of time, I feel like, before something happens. But right now, I'm at this stage where I'm find myself like working on the independent scene, and it's really exciting. I'm really happy to be doing it, and I feel like the independent scene has blown up so much that there's this array of talent that I haven't got to dip my feet into yet, and I'm really excited about that. I've gotten to work with the Bobby Roods, with Ty Dillinger, with Eric Young, with the Hardy Boys. I've got to wrestle all of these big names who have had like illustrious careers in their own rights. But now I get to see what the independent world has to offer from a different standpoint. And I'm really excited about that. And that's really where like House of Hardcore comes in. If you've never been to a House of Hardcore show, I can't put it over enough. It's awesome. It's a variety show. You get a bit of everything on their show. And that's the beauty of it. It's not just one certain style. You get everything. It's definitely a variety show with an array of talent that you can't help but, you know, but enjoy and have a great time when you're there. So wrestling for House of Hardcore is opening up those doors for me, and I get to experience what the best of what independent wrestling has to offer. And that's what I want. I want the best competition. I want to test myself against, you know, the best of independent wrestling and whoever that may be in your own eyes. So wrestling for House of Hardcore and organizations like that gives me that opportunity, and I couldn't be more excited about it.
That's very exciting. So the wrestling world, of course, is abuzz with the most recent big match of Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho. Did you see the match? Did you enjoy the match? If you did see it, what are your thoughts on that? New Japan Pro Wrestling just promoted the absolute brains out of that. And I actually had the pleasure of seeing it. I thought it was fantastic, but I was hoping to get your stance on that, if you did see it, or what you thought about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of professional wrestling. You know, I love pro wrestling in every sense of the word, and I still watch everything as much as I possibly can. You know, I watch everything. I have no bias towards pro wrestling. I'll watch Lucha Underground. I watch New Japan, WWE, Impact. I watch it all because I generally love pro wrestling. So, yes, I definitely watched Wrestle Kingdom. That whole show was great. From top to bottom, that was a fun show to witness. It was a long show. Don't get me wrong. She was long, but
yes,
it was awesome.
Was.
It was very enjoyable. Okada and Naito was great. The four-way was fantastic. And, of course, Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho was tremendous as well. And, I mean, it didn't come as a shock to me. I knew the match was going to be good. I was excited to watch the match. One of my favorite things about it was not so much the match itself, it was the build-up towards it and how fans were reacting to it. Twitter was abuzz, and social media in general was abuzz in regards to the match. And it was something that, like, you really never thought you'd see before. You know, I think, you know, 3-4 years ago, if you had said Kenny Omega versus Chris Jericho, Wrestle Kingdom, a lot of people wouldn't believe you. But the fact that it happened was tremendous. And two Canadians. Too, you know, so there's a point of pride for me there, being Canadian myself, watching that as well. But it was watching two pros perform and create, you know, a classic in their own right, and just really, you know, paint a beautiful picture with the canvas they were given. So of course, again, it came as no surprise to me that the match was what it was. I was pleasantly not surprised, but I watched, you know, with a smile on my face the entire time, because it was as good as I thought it was going to be. Both those guys are extremely talented in their own rights. So putting them in the ring together, you know, you're only going to get magic. And I think that's what they did that night.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I mean, seeing Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega going at it, it was a match that, you know, I think you're absolutely right. It's a match that, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, you would have said, yeah, that's not going to happen. But Now that it has happened, I think we can – I don't know how you'll feel about this, but I think this has really highlighted that there is a plethora of talent in the independent circuit, and that there is some value in going and watching these promotions now. What Omega and Chris Jericho accomplished, I think, really did shine a spotlight now for more, I guess you would say, mainstream fans to go look at New Japan Pro Wrestling, go look at Impact and see what these guys are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And like that's a fantastic feather in their caps that they were able to show that to a variety of a different audience perhaps, and hopefully open up the eyes, because it's just, it's better for pro wrestling in general. And again, like, I don't have any biases towards any type of pro wrestling. I want pro wrestling to be as successful as it possibly can on a global stage, you know what I mean? Because it's just, it's better for the fan. Everybody wins, you know, in that
yeah,
case.
Everybody.
It's better for the fans. It's better for the boys and girls who bust their butts to make this a living, you know. So it's healthy. It's a healthy shot for the business. And, how can you not be happy about that? How can you not be excited about that? So I feel like, you know, the fact that they were able to do that is awesome. And it helps. Does it just help New Japan Pro Wrestling, but again, it helps pro wrestling as a whole. And that's awesome. We need more of that, you know, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think they really did capture magic right there. They knew how to build it. They knew how to sell it. And I think what you said is just absolutely amazing. You know, amongst fans, there is, you know, and for me, I don't think there's really anything too wrong with this. I think there is a sort of toxicity that can come with it, but there's a tremendous loyalty to certain promotions. There is. There's fan bases that are just absolutely 100% behind their promotion. I think that's fantastic. But I think sometimes because of this, there's a short-sightedness. They don't see the value for the business as a whole, for the people who are putting themselves on the line, for them to be able to cross channels and go wrestle these matches with different companies, with people that they genuinely want to wrestle with. And I think that match definitely opens the door for a lot of people to go and do that.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I mean, I understand that there's people who have their brand of pro wrestling, and that's the only brand, and that's awesome. I love that you're passionate about pro wrestling. My only thing would just be open to other forms of pro wrestling. And if it's not your thing, then cool, that's totally awesome. Like, you're more than welcome to your opinion. But like, if I was just a WWE guy, I would never know some of the cool stuff that Japan's doing, or Mexico or England or anything. Like, I would never have been exposed to that. And I think back on that now, like, oh my gosh, I'd be missing out on so much, because there is a lot out there. There's so much talent and so many cool aspects of pro wrestling and other places that, you know, other organizations that are doing pro wrestling slightly different or outside the box that is really, really cool and exciting to think about and exciting to watch too. So again, I generally like to be open to things, and if it's not my cup of tea, then so be it. But that, you know, I'm still going to support pro wrestling as a whole, because it's an art form that I love, and I want it to be healthy. And in order to do that, I don't want to take myself away from anything. You know, just being open to new stuff is beneficial, in the sense that I get to witness so much other cool stuff that I never knew would exist had I not, you know, been open to it.
Absolutely. Well, I've only got two questions left for you, Crazy Steve, and then I'm going to cut you loose, because I know that you're very busy and you're probably trying to catch some rest wherever you and this has been a phenomenal interview. But I have to say, first of these last questions is there anything that you would personally like to promote for people to go check out? I know you're with House of Hardcore right now wrestling. You're looking for other places to wrestle as well. Tell everybody a little bit about, you know, what you're working on now and where they can check you out.
Yeah, so if you're not already, you can follow me on Twitter at Steve of Crazy. And I'm also on Instagram, and as well, if you go to my Twitter, all of my information as to where you can find me on other aspects of social media is on my Twitter bio. If you are a promoter and you want to book me, you can book me at bookcrazysteve@gmail.com, crazy spelled with two Z's. And I'm open to whatever, man. I want to experience as much of this this crazy business as humanly possible. So, but right now, my biggest project is House of Hardcore. I'm really excited about that. the things that Tommy Dreamer is doing is really awesome. And you can see House of Hardcore on Twitch. Twitch is an app. If you don't know, it is similar to YouTube. It's completely free. You don't have to pay for anything. You can get it on your phone, your tablet, your TV, whatever you want. If you go into www.twitch.tv/House of Hardcore, all one word, you will see their channel. And as of right now, all of the shows are up. The last show that we just did in the ECW Arena is up and it is streaming. Tommy Dreamer's House of Hardcore has a weekly television show that airs every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Twitch for free. You can catch that at any time. Brand new episode every Wednesday. And I think one of the cool things about House of Hardcore TV is that one of the aspects that Tommy wants to promote is real stories from, you know, from real people. And I'm a perfect example of that. I'm not the only example. There's plenty other awesome pro wrestlers that have their own really interesting story in their own right. And Tommy really wants to explore that and put that out there for people to see. So, you know, if you're somebody who's listening and you found my story interesting, I highly suggest you check out House of Hardcore and see some of the other fantastic athletes in their own stories. I think that's one of the coolest aspects of pro wrestling in general, is that everybody has a different story and it's always interesting, you know, as far as how they got into the business or what, you know, what the business has given them. There's always an interesting story. There's a bunch of pro wrestling books out there from famous pro wrestlers in their own right. But I feel like almost every single pro wrestler can write their own book because it's such a crazy and wacky business that everyone's story is generally interesting from one standpoint or another.
Absolutely. Well, Crazy Steve, we're going to get to the easiest question that you're going to answer this entire interview. This is the easiest question to ask this of every guest I get. And usually we get a positive response, but
okay,
enjoy coming
right
on the show. Oh yeah. Usually we do. Now, not every time,
not every time,
that comes on here. Yeah. Not everybody that comes on wants to come. Likes their time here. Did you enjoy your time here? And would you like to come back on sometime and talk about what you're doing and tell people more about your journey and what you've got planned for your future in this business? Because it is a fantastic story that you've told here today. And I know that a lot of people are going to it's going to resonate with a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, I had a great time. I feel like it'd be really awkward if I said no at this point, but in all seriousness, I had a great time. If there's an audience that wants me to come back, you know, I'd love to come back. So if there's an audience that wants it, then I will do my best to make time and come back on the show and chit chat with you about the lovable sport of professional wrestling.
Hey man, I'm always open to having you come back on. I'm always looking to showcase people and give them the opportunity to talk about their passion. And I'm very grateful that you came on today. I've got your number here. I'll tweet you. Well, I think I already sent you mine. I think you already have it. But if you don't, I'll
yeah.
send it to you on Twitter, and I'll keep touch with you on Twitter. Thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your journey with us. Guys, check out House of Hardcore. Check it out on Twitch. Follow Crazy Steve on social media. The guy is phenomenal in the ring. If you haven't seen him, you're missing out. Truly, truly remarkable performer. Thanks for taking the time, Crazy Steve. Really appreciate it, man. And I can't wait to have you back on.
Absolutely. The pleasure is all mine. Thank you so much for allowing me this opportunity to kind of share my story as well.
Hey, man. I really appreciate having you on, and I look forward to having you on in the future. Good luck over there at House of Hardcore. And I almost forgot before I let you go, Crazy Steve, you've got a lot of merchandise available for people to buy and support you and represent you. Where can they get it, Crazy Steve? Where can they get their Crazy Steve fix?
Yeah, absolutely. So I definitely have a pro wrestling tee store. You can get any one of my T-shirts for sale. I have a plethora of shirts up on my Pro Wrestling Tees store. So if you were to go to www.prowrestlingtees.com/crazysteve, you'll see my store there, and there's a bunch of cool shirts that I have designed myself, whether it be from drawings or paintings. You know, you can grab some of that. Or if you see me at any given independent show, I always have a plethora of merch, whether it be hats, 8x10s, t-shirts, and all of that. You know, I strongly suggest, even if you don't want to buy something, that's totally cool too, but please come up, say hello. Let me know you're enjoying the show, you know, and let's chit-chat for a little bit. So you can, yeah, you can definitely get any of my merch there at any independent show or ProWrestlingTees.com.
Absolutely. And just an FYI for everybody listening out there, Crazy Steve had no idea I was going to ask him that. He had no idea I was going to ask him any of the questions he got asked today, and he took it like a champ. He took it like a trooper. Thanks again, Crazy Steve. Good luck to you, man. And just keep crushing it out there, man. Just keep doing what you do, because I can tell you have a real passion for it, man. I'm looking forward to having you back on.
Absolutely, man. Thank you so much. Once again, I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. You have a great day. Wow, guys. Today we got a tremendous interview with Crazy Steve. If you didn't get to see it, check it out on Twitter. It's on Twitter right now. You can follow my Twitter. You can follow Crazy Steve on Twitter. It is going to be uploaded to YouTube later on tonight. My system's acting a little bit slow, but it should be up this evening. We're going to have it up. I've also got it on the Impact Fan Nation page on Facebook. It's also on my personal Facebook. Just follow me, Dallas Duclo, on Facebook, and you can get it or check out my page history, the Bareback Facts, History and Blood on Facebook to catch the rest of this interview if you're just tuning in now. Guys, do share the interview, tremendous interview. Check out Crazy Steve's merchandise on ProWrestling.com. Follow him at House of Hardcore. Check it out on Twitch. You can check him out all over the place. Great interview. Really appreciative to Crazy Steve for taking time out of his incredibly chaotic schedule to come on the show. We don't get to have such fun guests on the show all the time, and I'm stoked to have had him on the show, and I'm looking forward to having him back on in the future. That's all I've got for you guys today, and I hope you guys will tune in for the next show next time. Guys, enjoy the rest of your week, and man, oh man, follow Crazy Steve on social media, and you will not be disappointed. This has been another episode of the Bareback Facts, and we'll see you next time.